As the NBA restarts in the bubble, a lot of eyes have been on the eighth seed in the battle for who's trying to get into the playoffs in the West. And that battle just got a little bit more interesting yesterday with some results and news that will impact the rest of the bubble. It's ESPN Radio. Bart Scott, Jason Fitz, presented by Progressive Insurance. All guests are going to join us on the show, Penzo Performance Line. And Bart, we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about the battle for the eighth seed and how much love they're trying to give Zion and the Pelicans, and you know whether or not the Grizzlies got a bad hand as this thing started. And then last night, if you believe the Grizzlies got a bad hand, it got even worse as Jaren Jackson Jr. has now been lost with the torn meniscus. He is done in the bubble, and that makes the race for eight, Bart, a lot more interesting.
I mean, exactly. When you think about, you know, potentially what we can be seeing, even with the lead that they have, you know, do we have the play-in game? And without, you know, Jaren Jackson, you know, what does that mean as far as, you know, them, you know, a team coming in and being able to beat them back-to-back? And you think about the team that comes to mind for me, and it's the, you know, the Blazers, and you think about the veteran leadership that they have. You think about McCullen, and you, I don't know what this bubble Carmelo is all about, but it seems like he's turned the clock back. I don't know if it's the nightshade vegetables that he's staying away from, or if he talked to TB12. But I tell you what, he seems reinvigorated. He seems like, you know, he's on point. He's focused, and he's coming through. And he's vintage Melo right now with huge shots. As you know, they come out with a huge win over a team that is difficult to match up with and kind of a different in philosophies. When you think about the Rockets wanting to go small, and you think about, you know, how the Blazers, you know, tried to counter that. It's amazing to watch Carmelo, and it's great to have, just to think that he was the outside of the league looking in, and, you know, the Blazers gave him an opportunity and he was hesitant to go there. But, you know, this looks like this may not just be a fling. This may be a marriage, you know, for a couple of years.
Well, yeah, because as you mentioned, Portland gets the 110-102 win over Houston last night. And the Rockets have the hardest thing to get sometimes, which is benefit of the doubt. It feels like people at this point have decided that the Rockets, you and I included, are somebody we need to keep looking at in the bubble. So when you get a win over the Rockets, it seems to have a little bit extra oomph to a lot of people. So what we have in a matchup last night from Portland and Houston is we get this moment, as you mentioned, sort of the resurgence of Melo, but we also get this reminder of just how dang good that backcourt is. And I think that's the enticing part of this, right? Like, you start looking across the board at Dame and CJ and you think, man, this team is too good not to be in the playoffs. This is obvious. Portland should be the team that gets that eighth seed. It's only because I think you piece together the talent and then a big win that comes when you get the street cred that you get right now for beating Houston. You combine those elements with the injury for the Grizzlies, and it just feels like, although there are a few teams that want to be in this conversation, it feels like it's ripe for the taking for Portland.
And then when you think about it too, you know, you go back and I think a couple weeks ago how everybody was looking out their side eye at Isaiah Thomas when he said he thought that this team could be the most dangerous team if they got inside of the, you know, the playoff race. And you think, like, when we talk about it, it's no longer the big threes anymore. The league is comprised of big twos. And you have to give credit to Dame and McCullen for what they are. And then you throw Melo in there with some timely, you know, some timely shots and the veteran leadership, never, you know, afraid of the moment. And you look at Whiteside and you look at, you know, Nurkic, who's coming back and playing tremendous, you know, his first game back. This is a team with a lot more depth than people give them credit for.
Now, the funny thing here is, for anyone that doesn't know, the eight seed is what's up for grabs. And the way it's going to work with the bubble is that if whoever the nine seed is, if they're within four games of the eight seed, then they have the opportunity for a play-in game. So that's sort of the quick math on how to do this. So as you look ahead for the Grizzlies, the Trailblazers, they sit at 8-9 right now, the Spurs and the Pelicans. But there is sort of a funny moment to me, Bart, and I said this quickly yesterday, but I want to go back to it because we're making such a hubbub here over the eighth seed without really acknowledging the fact that, let's face it, the Pelicans are 9 games under .500, the Spurs 8 games under .500. I mean, these are bad teams in the whole, and we're trying to find a way to cram them into the playoff in a way that if we were talking about which 6-10 team we were going to cram into the bottom of the NFL playoffs, I think people would be freaking out. Are we maybe just trying to make some sort of compelling argument? Because I don't know that any of these teams are a good matchup for the Lakers, who are 51-15. Come on now.
Yeah, we just want to be entertained. And you think if it's a team that can match up with them or maybe potentially steal one, you would think it's maybe the Blazers. you know, because I just think that, you know, you look at the Pelicans, I don't think they're ready yet. They're still young and trying to figure it out. What we were talking about yesterday was it would be good for those guys just to get some type of experience moving forward, for Zion to get into the playoffs and go against LeBron, look at it, get a close look, a snapshot of what greatness looks like. You know, that's what we thought that this was going to be about. But when you think about a team that can potentially maybe steal one, maybe even two, you know, because Dame can go Dame, right? And we know he's one of the most clutch players. And because he plays in a small market, I think a lot of people don't give him the credit that he deserves as one of the great players in this league, one of the best, small guards in the league. And I think, you know, we're starting to be reminded of it. And if he gets in the tournament, we know that he has that clutch gene. But also, you know, Melo has a clutch gene. So now what happens is it gives you opportunity to really see a team that, you know, has maybe underachieved this year, but are getting healthy at the right time and trying to figure out how to play with Carmelo, how to play with some of the pieces that they've been missing the entire year. But, you know, it'll be exciting to see one of these teams with name recognition that gets in, you know what I mean, because you know that, you know, they may be able, if the Lakers come in lazy. I mean, because you look at what the weakness of the Lakers is, and it is their guard play. And you look at it, their guard play, and you know that it can be a huge disadvantage, you know, if the Blazers get in and CJ and Dame is on their job.
Now, you're totally right. He's Bart Scott. I'm Jason Fitz. We're together. We're on ESPN Radio. You're totally right that the matchup doesn't favor well for the Lakers in that sense. But I still can't look at the Blazers and figure out who's shutting down AD. I mean, I think, you know, AD is just one of those things that we take for granted already, not to mention LeBron. So there's the mismatches go both ways. But a lot of this, and you're right, you've mentioned Melo a few times, that at some point we have to look at Melo through the light of who he is right now. There's been a lot of disrespect for him, which Damian Lillard talked about last night on TNT after the Blazers' big win.
I mean, he's a Hall of Famer. You know, I think it's more disappointing that people are surprised by it. You know what I mean? He's a Hall of Famer, like I said. He's a great teammate. And that's what we expect from him. You know, we put him in those positions because we expect him to make those shots. We believe he's going to make those shots. And we brought him here because we knew he would make a difference for our team, and he's been doing that. So no surprises here. We expect that from him, and, you know, I'm glad that he's here to come through for us in those big situations.
And, Bart, there's a little bit of a both ways on it. I understand that if you look at the body of work as a whole, it's easy to say, hey, you know, why didn't we expect this from Melo? He can do this. But let's also be real about what we've seen from Melo the last several years, right? So, you know, there's two different versions of the narrative on Carmelo, the entire picture or the picture of the last 3 or 4 years. So I'm not going to fault people for not necessarily becoming enamored with it overnight. But it is okay then to turn around and say, hey, what are we getting in the bubble right now? And you're right. There's like this re-energized, rejuvenated version of Carmelo.
Yeah, and when you talk about, you know, what's been the narrative, whether it's the Knicks years or it's been the last couple of years where he's been, you know, struggled to find his way, I think it was the acceptance that things are changing. I mean, I think, you know, so we look at the unicorn or we look at the grand wizard who is LeBron James, and it seems like he just continues to get better with time and age. And I think Carmelo considers himself as a great player and an athlete, but at some point, some athletes have to come to the realization that, hey, this guy's just a little bit better than you, and he's different from you, and that's hard to accept. And I think the fact that, you know, when he went to Houston, he was like coming off the bench, ha, 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 you know, and now he's accepting who he is and embracing his role and understanding that it's changing. He still can be great, but he has to be great in spurts. And the thing is, he's giving them real quality minutes. You talk about playing 36 minutes yesterday. We're talking about Zion and his conditioning not being able to play, you know, past a certain amount of minutes. But you look at Carmelo coming in tremendous shape. We always was wondering, you know, who was going to come out, you know, on a better side of this pandemic when we came out of quarantine. And, you know, Carmelo came in, and it was going to separate the professionals from the non-professionals. And you see the guys that came out and looked at it as an opportunity to get in shape and look at it as an opportunity to gain an advantage. And Carmelo clearly was one of those guys that saw it. And remember, he was a guy that was on the outside looking in, saying that he didn't know if he was going to come back and if he was going to opt out. I mean, I know that the Blazers are happy that he did. I know Melo is happy that he did because he's represented himself in such a great way in this early, these early games. And if they get in the playoffs, he'll be able to put his skill set, you know, back on display. But then it's going to open up his future. So we haven't seen the last of Melo. But the fact that he's embracing that, hey, he isn't the same player. And great players find ways to be effective when their body fails them, right? The mind never fails them, but it's the body, right? We remember when Kobe wasn't able to just dunk on people all the time and be able to play with that tremendous energy level. Remember when Michael Jordan wasn't able to play at that same level. What did they do? They developed the turnaround, which was an unstoppable shot that allowed them to still be equally as dominant, but they were more dominating with their mind, not their body. And that's where Carmelo is, and that's what he's going to have to accept, and that's what he's seeming to finally embrace.
He's Bart Scott. I'm Jason Fitz. We're together on ESPN Radio. We'll keep getting you all the NBA news you need. Got some great guests. We'll get some thoughts on that over the course of the day. But coming up, big news for a big starting quarterback in the NFL that should have every single fan base on edge. We'll tell you what the latest is on it next. But first, as you get back to business, Grainger wants to remind you that small things can make a big difference, like marking safe distances with floor tape and posting reminders to wash hands. And as always, Grainger, there to help, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, free access to product specialists, 24/7 support, safety recovery guidelines, and more. It's part of their commitment to help you adapt and recover in these challenging times. You can learn more. All you got to do is visit Grainger.com/recovery. Grainger, for the ones who get it done. Something got done yesterday in the NFL that should have you all nervous. We'll tell you about it next. Bart Scott, Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80. Not every team's going to play this fall. Be prepared for a college football landscape that's going to look different. Not every conference is going to make the same decisions on how they do it. Not every team within every conference is going to make the same decisions on what they're comfortable with. And it's time to start looking through the lens of college football and expecting things to be, at the very least, oftentimes different. He's Bart Scott. I'm Jason Fitz. We're on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and ESPN News, presented by Progressive Insurance. All of our guests join us on the Shell Penzel Performance Line. And Bart, we got the news this morning that UConn has decided not to play college football this year. And that appears that it is not just this fall. It appears that is for the season. They are not looking at winter football either. So UConn has just decided not to field a football program for the year. And that's the first FBS school to come out and make that decision at this level.
I tell you what, at me when they decide not to play basketball, that would be the shocker there for UConn. That would be something to see. Like, you don't think of UConn as a football school. You think of them as a basketball school. But, you know, it may be the right thing to do, and we'll see how that turns out.
Well, and that's going to be what each school has to decide at some point. Each school is going to have to figure out what they're actually comfortable with. And that's why, as I said earlier, I mean, we're looking at this point, and there's been some reports this morning about the Big Ten finally deciding what their conference is going to look like, what their scheduling is going to look like. Looks like they're going to begin all scheduling beginning September 5th. There'll be two bye weeks, two open dates. They're still trying to figure out exactly who's going to go where, and the Big Ten's still trying to figure out exactly what it looks like. So, you know, every conference, it's a reminder that every conference is going to be looking at what makes the most sense for them from a scheduling standpoint, right? I mean, that's really what this is about. How do you have the most flexibility to make sure you can get the games in with the best partnership possible, which is why you eliminate out-of-conference conversation, because it just makes things cleaner if you got to move games, delay games, cancel games, right?
And I wonder how the geography works as well. I wonder how the geography works as far as, you know, do you want to try and make a schedule where it's not a lot of travel, you can get away with being on a bus, not a lot of flying and things of that sort. And also, you know, when you think about the Big Ten, it's 14 teams. I wonder what scheduling is going to be and, you know, how conferences are, because, you know, if they're still going to have the national championship and things are going to stay the same, then you want to make sure that you have the best strength of schedule that you can have. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, well, what these teams are going to agree, who they're going to agree to play, because you might not want to have some of those easy wins because you want to have strength of schedule to try and make sure that you can impress the voters the most so that you can have a great ranking.
It's a really good point. That, you know, at the one time, you want to play Vandy because you can get the win, but you don't want to play Vandy because the win doesn't help you. ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. He's Bart Scott. I'm Jason Fitz. We're holding down the fort. We're keeping the seat warm. Obviously, you guys have heard the announcements. On August 17th, the new radio show will debut in this slot, the new morning show. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. So we had J. Will on yesterday. We'll keep the rotation going today. We're joined now by Keyshawn Johnson. Key, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate you coming on with us and joining us. I mean, we're talking right now about the college football landscape. If you were on the playoff committee, how are you judging who's good and who's not if they get that far when we've got such different scheduling this year, particularly with the conferences?
Well, thanks a lot for having me on to begin with. Well, I think when you look at it, much like Bart just said, you know, UConn made, they should probably cancel football for good, save that money. basketball is where they make their bread and butter. That's where it's laid down at. You know, this is the first opportunity that you've seen a college football program at the Power Five, you know, the FBS level, decide to say, you know what, we're going to do something different here. And a lot of teams are probably sorting through, you know, Stanford earlier in the month or a couple months ago decided to eliminate several athletic programs, not football or basketball, but some of the, you know, the water polos and some of those sort of things to get, you know, basically to save money and not have to pay a bunch of money when they're not making money. And you're going to probably see that here, you know, in the next, this is the first wave in the next several days. I'm sure you're going to see other programs start to talk about eliminating certain things within the athletic program to save money. It'll be interesting. It's a different world we're living in right now. For a short period of time, conferences will try to realign themselves to try and get on the field. Now, whether or not that's realistic, who knows? Because you have things going on in the Pac-12 conference. You have things going on in the ACC, the Big Ten, the SEC. Obviously, the SEC would like to play and make all the money they possibly can make. But yet and still, it's going to be very difficult when you don't have the students on campus, but you're asking the student-athletes to get on campus. You're also going to be asking parents to sign waivers for medical issues, things of that nature. So it's a lot to be done here in a short period of time.
Now, when you say that, to me, you're describing a professional, not a student athlete. You're describing a professional, because if it's regular students aren't allowed to be on campus, then why should I? I can name a couple of conferences, whether it's Conference USA, the Independence, the Mid-America. You can counsel all those guys, because I can imagine that it's not a huge money generator for them, especially you're not going to have concessions and ticket sales. You know, but is this a moment, you know, we see what's going on in the Pac-12. Is this a moment that student athletes should grasp? And who should be the voice? Do you think they should hire a powerful attorney to be able to be the voice for them? Because, you know, as individuals and as players, they're not qualified to be able to really, you know, execute the plans and wishes that they have as far as being able to own some of their likenesses and some of the legal, you know, jargons that has to go and be ironed out.
Well, clearly in time, they're going to do some independent counseling. There's no question about that. There'll be several major law firms that'll be in the running to take the lead on this, whether they're coming out of D.C., New York, L.A., Chicago, Florida, wherever the big firms are. They're going to want to get a piece of the pie and be a part of it. And I'm sure the student-athletes are smart enough to realize that they have to align themselves with qualified people to take it to the next level. This is just the beginning. And I'm glad to see that they are empowering themselves in a position that, you know, whenever you start to speak, people hear. When you're quiet, no one says anything. It's like, you know, be quiet, don't say anything, just go in the corner, you're on scholarship, go to training table, play football. And if you're so lucky, when your career is over, maybe you get a chance at the professional level, or maybe your degree transfers and allows you to go out into the workforce and get a job making $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 out the gate. But now that the players have discovered that they can empower themselves, I'm about to take my hat off to them. They just need to continue to stay with it and don't weaken.
Talking to Keyshawn Johnson, who you'll be able to hear on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin right here starting August 17th. Keyshawn, what's changed since when you were in college that's allowed players to have so much more of a voice now?
You know, I think it all, to be honest with you, I think it started with LeBron James and basketball. And when LeBron made a decision to do something different several years ago, when he decided to take his talents to South Beach. And at that point, people started to kind of see that, okay, maybe I could start to do things different and not get as much backlash as if I would have many years ago. When Keyshawn Johnson, talk about myself in the third person, decided to say something, the germ spreaders had something negative to say whenever you push back on what they deemed as authority as a professional athlete. So as time went on, guys like LeBron James said, you know what, no, I'm going to empower myself. I'm going to be the de facto general manager and put teams together. I'm going to make the moves and sign one-on-one deals and decide to do things the way I want to do them, and you're going to follow. And then all of a sudden, things started to snowball where players started to say, well, wait a minute, whether it was many years ago, it was Ed O'Banning Jr. or Ed O'Banning and Charles fighting the NC2A for name, likeness, and images. Whether they got a cent out of the deal or not, they opened up the door. Whether it was a Northwestern football program and some of those players that decided to say, wait a minute, take a look at what's going on here with our name, likeness, and image. And as time went on, players started to realize, wait a minute, I got a little juice. Now, obviously, where we are in today's pandemic, where we are in the unrest in America, where we are in social injustice, all of those sort of things have now allowed the player to say, okay, I'm going to not be afraid to voice my opinion anymore because the doors are open and the windows are up, the curtains are pulled back. We see who you are. Now I got an opportunity to say what I need to say and do what I need to do. And if you decide to push back on me, repercussions for you are going to be severe. So let's continue to move these things forward. And that's where we are today.
Now, yeah, I don't know if you've heard the investigation that got launched in Colorado State about players being discouraged to report symptoms and the lack of testing.
Are you surprised, Bart?
Not at all, because I think that, you know, players are the most, you know, college players are the most abused because the coach holds your future in his hands. He holds the narrative.
Well, he thinks he holds your future in his hands. That was scare tactics many years ago. That's changed now. You know, that was the same way the coach from Florida State lied about speaking to the team. He never anticipated any of his players would say anything. Right? It's just the Oklahoma State coach. He felt like his players wouldn't say anything. This is what's happening, is they're misjudging. Look at Washington State coach. They're misjudging the situation. And when you misjudge the situation, you get bit. And that's what's going on in college sports. There's a lot of programs are misjudging or misjudge the situation. And when they do that, players now are saying, well, wait a minute, hold on. UCLA and Chip Kelly, these student athletes at UCLA said, no, 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 man, hold on. I need a third party to look at you because I can't trust you. You got a background of garbage, and we know it, and we can't trust you because all you want to do is try to win football games. And I've said this to many people over the last several months is, unless you have a DR, an MD, a PhD in front of your name, or you are in some major science building, don't tell me anything about COVID. Okay? You go and deal with the chalkboard and write a play. I don't want to hear anything about we're going to play football and we're going to practice. Unless a doctor tells me, or somebody with significant science knowledge that happens to work with the doctors, I won't be stepping on the field.
You guys can listen to him right here starting August 17th with J. Will and Zubin. It'll be Keyshawn, J. Will and Zubin, 6 to 10 a.m. every single day on ESPN Radio, right where you get all your ESPN fun. Keyshawn, good luck with the new show, man. Really excited for it, and thanks so much for the time. Appreciate you coming on with us this morning.
Yes, sir. All right, B-Cart.
Great stuff from Keyshawn, as always.
He was part of the inspiration of my rant. Remember? He was a big part of that quote.
Look at that. Okay, we're going to get to that in a second. I got to keep working here. I got to move to the next. We got too many experts today, Bart, so I'm going to move to the next one quickly here, but I'm going to get more on that story in a second. Let's go over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line again. We go from one big name to another on the morning show. ESPN senior NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski joining us. Obviously, there's been some big news in the last 24 hours in the bubble, Woj. Thanks for the time this morning. We appreciate it. So Memphis deals with the injury to Jackson Jr. What's that mean for them moving forward?
Yeah, just guys, first, good to be with you. Listen, devastating in the short term for them. It's meniscus. You know, it's, you know, an injury that'll have them back for the start of training camp. But the Grizzlies are, listen, they were one of the great stories in the league this year. Nobody imagined them as a playoff team before the season. You know, Jaren Jackson Jr. and John Morant are going to be you know, one of the great, I think, tandems in the league over time. And they showed, you know, this year that they were team, they were two players who could match up with anybody in the league. And, but what it does in the short term for the Grizzlies is not only, I think they came in here thinking they were going to try to hold off the rest of the West, and play in that 8-9 play-in tournament. Right now, they're fighting to hold on to the 8th seed. They could drop to 9th and then have to beat somebody twice to get in the 8th seed. Portland's got has gotten within a game and a half of them. But I will say this. I think Memphis is, you know, they played without Jaren Jackson at times this season. They're still going to be very competitive with Morant, Brandon Clark, another outstanding rookie from that group. I wouldn't count them out, but you see some teams with some momentum. You know, the Suns have been great. They probably started from too far behind to get to ninth. But I think you can see just for the development of that young team to come down here, start off 3-0, have a training camp and play these games is going to be really beneficial to their future. And obviously Portland right now at a game and a half and a game and a half back, you know, they've got back the size that they lost this season. That is that you see can be a matchup problem for them for other teams in the playoffs. So that race for 8 and 9 just got a lot more interesting, no question.
Now, one of the other teams that's chasing is the Pelicans. But we saw Zion get more minutes the other day. Do we see them giving him even more minutes and doing whatever they have to do to get them in the playoffs so that they can get this invaluable experience of what it's like to be in a playoff race and also actually play in the playoffs? Or will they not put Zion at risk, understanding that it's a short turnaround before the next season, and play the long game?
No, it's a good question, Bart, and I don't think they're going to – they're not going to do anything to put him at risk. They're not going to recklessly chase, in their minds, the eighth seed. They want to get into playoffs, and that was a team – you know, it's funny. You heard different things from different teams who were going to be in the play-in and or who were going to be in the restart – about how they were going to treat this. And New Orleans was a team all along that they wanted to be in this. They wanted to get in the playoffs. You know, they have a mix of young guys and veterans, you know, the Drew Holidays, the JJ Reddicks, who, you know, are guys who, you know, have been in the playoffs a lot and who certainly wanted to be back in there. But I think you'll see his minutes incrementally increase. But you're not going to see Zion Williamson playing 40 minutes in these games. I think you'll probably see him settle somewhere in the low 30s. You know, 13 days off for him, leaving the bubble, coming back, quarantining. You could still see him getting back into condition. And, yeah, they don't want to – they're certainly not – they don't want to put themselves in a position where they're risking injury for him or feel like they're risking an injury for him to get into the postseason. And – you know, they've got a ways to go here. I mean, they had a good win. You know, they had a good win the other day. But they're a team that, you know, right now has to make up some ground. There's not a lot of time left. But Memphis, what happens to Memphis now at number 8? If they're able to just sort of get a couple more wins here and hold on to that 8th spot, you know, it'll, you know, certainly New Orleans will, you know, have a chance to still be in that conversation.
You're listening to ESPN Radio. Bart Scott, Jason Fitz. We're talking to ESPN NBA insider Adrian Wojnarowski. Woj, so far in the bubble, fouls are way up, free throws are way up, points are way up. I thought defense was going to be the first thing that transferred into the bubble. Where are things going differently than you expected?
Yeah, it's you know, what's going to be interesting in the bubble is compare with the teams and the officials. And everybody's on top of each other in here. I mean, everybody, you know, yesterday I was over sitting with a general manager talking and an opposing coach came up and talked. And there's like, you know, it's funny when rivals, you know, you're seeing coaches and GMs and players, and everyone's passing each other. And there's one like sort of like the internet, like the international language of competitors. Like what's the one thing when they get together, they start talking about like, the officials, right? And I was sitting there watching, and as guys come up, it's like the first thing they bring up. It's like the safe topic for them to talk about. But you know, in some ways, the refs, it's a little bit of preseason for them too, and you can see them trying to get their rhythm. And you know, it's a different environment for everybody. I think players are learning how to play in here. Referees are learning how to officiate and call technicals when everybody can hear everything that's said. You know, listen, it's you can hear Carmelo calling for rebounds. You can hear what the coach is yelling on the sideline. And so how they officiate technical fouls, things that you hear on the court that you wouldn't hear with a crowd, and do refs feel like they have to respond to that because they know maybe the mic picked it up or the opposing coach heard it? Whatever is from that point of view, and I think you're right. There's been a lot of foul calls. There's been a lot of free throws, and you know it'll be interesting to see how differently it starts to be officiated as we get into the playoffs, because it's a very short, you know, it's an 8-game sprint and then into the playoffs.
Well, as we came into this bubble talking about, you know, three teams: the Clippers, the Lakers, and the Bucks. What's the team that isn't getting the attention that they deserve, and why?
Well, you know, listen, I think two teams in the East, or one in particular, is the Toronto Raptors. I mean, they are playing. They've come in here and picked right up where they left off before the hiatus. It is a mature team. It is a tough-minded team. It's a team with great skill with Pascal Siakam, Kyle Lowry, a perennial all-star, great role players. And there is a championship. There's still a championship swagger to that team. And obviously they lost Kawhi Leonard, but they were a team last year that played very well without Kawhi at times. And Siakam showed that he could carry the Stars' load without him. And Nick Nurse will probably be the coach of the year by the media vote. Nick Nurse is an innovative coach. You know, he came up in the minor leagues. He's used to experimenting. He will throw sets and defenses and matchups at star players and other teams that you see at times get them out of rhythm. They're just the team nobody wants to play. I would not be surprised if Toronto emerged from the East. I don't think you talk to the coaches and players, and you know that's certainly a team that still commands everybody's respect. And I still think the Celtics, Jason Tatum, you saw it before the season shut down. You know, he was playing like an all-NBA. He's playing like a superstar, and you know, having that guy in the playoffs is, you know, listen, you've got to have that guy you can go to at the end of games, and they've got him in Tatum and Jalen Brown, Gordon Hayward, all-star level players. And obviously Kemba Walker, his health, his knee, you're starting to see him show himself. I think the East is going to be an absolute dogfight to see who emerges. Milwaukee's been a team that is so far, you know, you still see them trying to get their rhythm back. They get Eric Bledsoe back in now, their point guard. But Milwaukee's still a team, you know, that you can see trying to sort of, you know, get back what they had. And they have time to do that.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at Woj ESPN. Woj, as always, stay safe, my friend, most importantly. But we really appreciate you joining us and giving us all the insight.
Guys, thanks for having me. Talk to you soon.
Adrian Wojnarowski with great stuff there. Don't forget, by the way, the first major of 2020 finally here. Get exclusive coverage of the PGA Championship August 6th through the 9th on ESPN and ESPN+. And since we know you've been missing golf, we here at ESPN Radio teamed up with our friends at PGA to give you all something big to look forward to in 2021. Your chance to win a VIP experience to the 2021 PGA Championship at the world-class Kiawah Island Golf Resort. The four-day, three-night grand prize package for the winner and guest includes round-trip air and hotel at the Sanctuary, a five-star oceanfront hotel on the island, two tickets to the PGA Chalet, and two pairs of Wanamaker Club tickets, two free one-year-long subscriptions to ESPN+. You can stream live coverage of featured holes every weekend on ESPN+, win a year of exclusive live sports originals, and more with ESPN+. For your chance to win, all you got to do is go to ESPNRadioSweeps.com to enter now through August 11th. Limit to one entry. One grand prize winner will be selected. Visit www.ESPNRadioSweeps.com for official rules. Coming up next, for once, we're actually talking about breaking news from Connecticut that involves football. I know that sounds strange. We'll explain it next. Yes, live sports are back, but just like the rest of us, we're all starting to get back on the road again. The stops we make seem more special than before, right? Like stopping to watch a game at our friend's place or stopping in our favorite spot to cheer on every amazing shot, score, and win. And between those stops, there's Shell. Stop in to fill up with Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium Gasoline, their best fuel ever, and it'll help you keep your engine running like new. Stop in, save with the Fuel Rewards program. Just download the app. We all know how to do that. Or go to FuelRewards.com to join, and you'll never pay full price for gas again. Finally, stop in and get snacks and essentials that can save you even more at the pump. Get that box of Mike and Ike's that you deserve. Just a few of the ways Shell helps you make the most of the stops you need to make. See full terms and conditions at FuelRewards.com. In engines that continuously use Shell V-Power Nitro Plus Premium gasolines. UConn football breaking news. We'll tell you about it next. ESPN Radio, ESPN News. He's Bart Scott. I'm Jason Fitz, ESPN Radio, presented by Progressive Insurance. And we just told you during SportsCenter that UConn has made a big announcement today. And, you know, Bart and I had a little fun earlier. And one of the things we joked about was that we could have a little fun at the expense of UConn because hopefully Dan Orlovsky wasn't listening. Well, now we have to head over to the Shell Penzo Performance Line where we are joined by Dan Orlovsky. I made the joke that you were one of the three people that might be upset that UConn wasn't playing football this fall, Dan. I'll admit it. I'll admit it to you since we're on the phone
Shots
together.
Fired.
I know. That's what I did. But give me your reaction. The big news, UConn not going to play football this season.
Yeah, we all make poor jokes at times. It just seems that you do it consistently, Jason. So head up on that, but keep
your chin up. I should have been a dad.
As a former alumni, it's disappointing, but I have to remove my emotion from situations like this to do my job. Makes a lot of sense for UConn. You know, one, the schedule challenges that they have, being independent and the Power Five conferences declaring that, you know, for 99% of their schedule, it's going to be in conference only. So there was going to be challenges of trying to find teams to play that, you know, made sense for UConn, both athletically and then financially. And then the second thing is, you know, once a program like UConn that doesn't have a wealth of financial flexibility gets going under the protocol of what college football has set forward, you know, I think what happened was because they got to do some practices and start some, you know, days of camp, that they looked back and said, how realistic is this for us, both their leaders when it comes to their head coach and administrators and then their players, how realistic it is it for us to pull this off with the challenges that they have, with the testing that they have to go through, with the time that they have to wait for tests to come back. And so I think with all those variables added in, they looked at it and said, for us, for UConn, and for us not being the under the financial restraint, or I guess the financial demand that some of those schools bring in, it did not make sense for them this season to kind of do or go forward with their season. That's why they pulled the plug. And I guess if you're a team that is young and is in a somewhat similar situation at UConn, you're going to reap some benefit from it as well, because this will turn into a redshirt year for some of your young players, and that will, in the long run, play well for the student athletes.
You know, that was my next question. Where does the coach go from here as far as how do you keep the guys engaged? How do you keep them, you know, in shape, and how do you keep them focused, you know, not having a season? Are they going to be on campus, or are they going to do remote learning? Or what's the access? When you talk about getting the red shirt year, is this going to be a year where they can just concentrate on their studies? Or is this still a year where you're going to have football activities going on even though you don't have games?
Yeah, I mean, that'll go school to school, I'm sure, and the state government. And then if kids will be on campus, this is a guess. My guess is that the athletes will stay on campus, you know, and they might have a little bit more flexibility in their days depending on classes and if they're in person or remote. And so these schools will be very diligent with how they approach the training for their players. This will turn into a redshirt year for every single player. And so they will spend a ton of time in the weight room, a ton of time with their strength and conditioning coaches. Maybe that they'll have opportunity to be on field with coaches for a specific time, maybe twice a week or something like that, you know, developing the football skill aspect of things. So I'm sure that, listen, these coaches aren't just going to sit back and allow their players to do nothing for 6 months. I can promise you that, or 8 months, however long this will take to get past. And so, you know, I think it'll be very specific, but they will make sure that there is development and growth for every single player, at least the opportunity to do that. Here's the interesting part. Your seniors, right? What happens with your seniors? That's the most interesting thing, because UConn won't be the only school. There will be other schools who will do this. And so let's say you are a redshirt senior this coming fall. In 1 month, you are starting your redshirt senior football season. Do you get another season? Like that, because you'll have to be granted another season by the NCAA to play next year. And so that will be something that'll be very interesting coming from UConn and also a lot of the other schools that will make this decision. What happens with the seniors?
See, great minds think alike, because that's exactly where I was going. And I'm talking about the byproduct of when teams don't play. It's a trickle down effect, because you don't have people leaving, but you're going to maybe have people coming in, because how does that affect the incoming recruitment of high school players? And what does that mean as far as you being able to carry enough scholarships to be able to have enough scholarships to offer to incoming freshmen? So that's the byproduct, I believe, that the NCAA hasn't really started to really think about. You know, what about the players that opted out that has to get granted those years? Will there be space?
That'll be incumbent on, you know, so.
I think we lost Dan. We had Dan there, but we lost.
And there might be some seniors who said, you know what, coach, like. I'm here. You hear me?
Gotcha. We got you, Dan. Sorry about that.
You got that Nextel connection?
Okay. Yeah. You know, we actually had these storms come through this area, so me working using my cell phone is actually an act of God right now. But what I was saying was, let's say you're a program with 18 seniors, right? You're going to have to sit down with your head coach and go, yeah, I want to come back, or no, you know what, coach, it's time for me to move on. I'm graduating. And so if there's 9 seniors left over, then the NCAA needs to grant that institution, that program, 9 extra scholarships for that year. You're allowed to have 94 guys on scholarship this coming season, right? And so that's the way that the NCAA is going to handle that. I'm sure there's going to be some coaches who find their way around it to their advantage, but that will be so specific to the program. But that needs to be something that is unquestionably granted by the NCAA.
You guys can follow him on Twitter at DanOrlovsky7. Dan, as always, man, we appreciate it when you come on, especially with the expertise on UConn. Nobody does it better, my friend. Stay safe. We appreciate you this morning.
Be good, but work on the Jets. Thanks, guys.
We know they ain't casting basketball no matter what.
Oh, and Dan telling me to good luck on the jokes. ESPN Radio presented by Progressive Insurance. What's not a joke is the fact that UConn, according to the Hartford Courant newspaper, according to an article in 2020, UConn Athletics lost $42 million in 2019 after a decline in ticket sales and league revenue as they opted out of the American Athletic Conference at the time. Mm. So you're talking about $42 million in losses last year when they played football games. So as much as we have joked about some things, this is a reminder that even a school at UConn's level is going to have serious financial ramifications for what comes next. So that's obviously going to be a big concern for everybody, for every college program. We're going to get into some more interesting college football news, of course, and we're going to do that after this from the PGA. The first major of 2020 finally here. You can get exclusive coverage of the PGA Championship August 6th through the 9th on ESPN and ESPN Plus. And since we know you've been missing golf, ESPN Radio has teamed up with our friends at the PGA to give you all something big to look forward to in 2021. That's right, free stuff. Who doesn't love free stuff? It's your chance to win a VIP experience to the 2021 PGA Championship at the world-class Kiawai Island Golf.